Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.
Hello again. Let me introduce you to our political panel joining us here in studio this weekend. They're Roderick O'Gorman, Green Party leader and TD for Dublin West and still the Minister for Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth. Eimear Higgins, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Midwest and still the Minister of State for Business, Employment, Retail. And Paul McAuliffe, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West. Roderick O'Gorman, I want to go to yourself first because you've had time to digest, I suppose, the results of the general election without delivering your analysis publicly since then. Have you had time to talk to your colleagues who lost their seats and what's the overall analysis of what went wrong?
Yeah, many members of our parliamentary party, former parliamentary party, met last week. We had a 3-hour meeting and we discussed many of the issues. I think it's important to say the election results were incredibly disappointing for our party. But as I said in the Dáil this week, we still have a voice in Dáil Éireann, which is different to the situation in 2011. We'd hope to have a voice in the Shannon after the Shannon elections, 23 councillors on city and county councils across the country and another 5 in Northern Ireland. So the party is in a different position to 2011, where we've taken a battering in the election, but we still have a strong base to build from.
What's the state of play with public funding?
We got 3% of the vote, so we'll maintain public funding, which again is different to 2011. But I think in terms of, I suppose, the attitude within the party is also very different to 2011, because then we'd come out of government a really difficult time with very little to show for it, whereas the strong view across all our former TDs on when we met last week was we had done what we committed to do when we went into government in 2020 and we delivered. And there was no sense of regret, no sense of we made a mistake. Everyone was of the view that hard as this result has been, we'd all have done it again if we'd gotten that choice in 2020, even knowing what the outcome was going to be.
Is it harder to understand then, because you were involved in the rebuilding of the party post 2011? People might, you know, see that the economy crashed into a wall at that stage and, you know, there was retribution exercised by the public. But in terms of the green agenda, you would argue presumably that you delivered in government and yet you weren't rewarded for it. So is there a lot of disillusionment amongst those in the party, both those who lost their seats and those who campaigned for them?
No, I wouldn't say there is. We did deliver. We delivered climate laws that have, you know, brought our climate emissions down to the lowest in 30 years. We delivered investment in public transport. We saved people money in terms of cutting public transport fares and reducing childcare costs. But in a general election, the smaller party in a coalition faces a squeeze. That's always been the way in Irish politics. And we were squeezed from a sense that people who were voting for change on the kind of the progressive left chose Labour and chose the Soc Dems over us. People who were voting for stability chose Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael ahead of us. So we were squeezed.
Helped
on
perhaps
both
by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael's portrayal of the Greens in the lead up to the election.
Look, that's probably part of it. Absolutely, yeah. And look, that's politics. We're all grown ups here. No one's expecting favors from anybody else. But one figure that struck me, like the Labour Party got 1.7% more vote than the Greens did in this election, and they got 10 more seats than we did. So for smaller parties, we're always working on the margins. And in an election on election day, if those margins go with you, if you get the break of the ball like we did in 2020, we would have been ahead of Labour and Soc Dems and benefited from their transfers. This time around, we were behind them in most first counts and we never got to see the benefit of transfers. So, you know, those margins for small parties really make a big difference. But one thing that does concern me is that the centre-left vote and the centre-left share of seats hasn't grown. Just the seats have moved from the Green Party to Labour and the Soc Dems. And I think that is something those of us who want to see progressive politics advance over the next 4.5 years need to think about.
Public representatives who didn't retain their seats still have to eat for the next 5 years. They may seek other employment. Do you get the impression that some of your former colleagues will now be leaving politics to pursue other careers in the interim? Are any of them taking a step back from careers in politics at this stage, or will they be rebuilding towards the next outing at European and local elections?
Well, two of our senators have indicated that they're stepping back. Other than that, no one has made any clear decisions yet, and I haven't asked people that yet, to be honest, Colm. I want to give people the Christmas to, you know, recover, reflect with their families. We, as a party, we have our national convention in January, in the middle of January. We'll hopefully add a senator or maybe more to our ranks by the end of January. And then we'll be devising a new strategic plan and looking very much forward to 2029, the local and European elections those year, that year, looking to rebuild our councillor base. We, as I say, we still have 23 councillors, some of them who topped the poll in their areas.
But
in,
it's going
in
to be a low, long,
election.
Slow process of rebuilding, isn't it?
It
because,
is.
Because of the coincidence of general and local elections in the same year, you're not looking at the same time horizons maybe of other times where there's the equivalent of a midterm election to rebuild.
That's assuming the next government runs a full term, which, you know, there's
you have your
no assumptions yet. Well, I do have a doubt about the stability of it, and we'll probably discuss that more later on. But look, it's going to take time to rebuild. We absolutely understand that, but we've done it before. We've done it from a much lower base, and fundamentally, the issues that we prioritise as a party on climate, they're not going away, and our party isn't going away, and we will continue to highlight those. And the fact that I have a voice in the Dáil makes it much easier for us to do that in the years to come.
You said after the general election that you wouldn't be looking to re-enter government on this occasion. I think I'm right in saying, but have you spoken to Micheál Martin and Simon Harris about the election, about the conduct of the election since then?
No, I think the Tánaiste sent me a text on the night of the election, but I haven't had any discussions with them about the election.
Phone conversations.
We've had one cabinet meeting since.
Right, and no conversations even on the fringes of that.
No,
nothing.
No.
Emer Higgins, you've heard from Roderick O'Gorman there. Do you think that his party was unfairly portrayed by your party in the run-up to the elections in order to, I suppose, portray them as the villain of the piece of the last government, to be the lightning rod of some of the government's policies? Because, after all, say the carbon tax, for example, was something that was introduced by Richard Bruton, but there was nobody rushing forward maybe to claim credit for that.
I suppose people don't rush forward to claim credit for taxes. That's often how it works in politics. The Greens have had a really significant impact in the last government. You just heard Roderick point to so many of their achievements. And I suppose, speaking as a Dublin representative, public transport investment and the reduction in the introduction of the 90-minute fare and some of those have had a huge impact in my constituency. Ireland, of course, and it was during the general election, so probably didn't receive much attention, but Ireland received its best ever ranking on the global emissions score. And a lot of that is down to the policies that the Greens ensured were put front and centre.
It's safe to say that now, isn't it, after the public have gone to the polls?
That is the reality. You know, that came out during the election. As I said, it didn't get much attention, but that is what happened. I mean, climate change is an existential crisis. Every government needs to absolutely make sure that we have pro-environmental policies.
You could see the next government carrying on all of the policies that were kick-started.
Not all of them, no, but I think the next government absolutely has to have climate change as a priority.
Which ones would you not continue?
Well, I suppose I haven't looked in depth at the Greens manifesto.
Sure, but what ones what about the Greens, apart from that, the programme for government in terms of, say, the Nature Restoration Fund? The Greens were keen to earmark the funding there. The cabinet, other cabinet colleagues weren't as keen to nail down what would be spent on that. So which of the Green priorities would you not be keen to go forward with similarly?
Listen, that's up to the negotiating team. At the moment, we have a negotiating team from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael sitting down, going through the policies that were in both of our manifestos, first and foremost, and that looking as well at what was in the last programme for government that needs to be included in the next one. I mean, we're at the point now where all of those policies are being looked at and being weighed up, and decisions will be made over the next couple of weeks.
Paul McAuliffe, I think your party leader Micheál Martin was saying that he was at pains to try and get the Green Party leader to mention what roads projects would be on the agenda to state them publicly. Do you think there'll be more roads built now that the Greens aren't in government?
Yeah, look, there certainly was a view within the Fianna Fáil parliamentary party that any discussion on roads was something that the outgoing Minister for Transport was not prepared to have. But I think, look, rather than getting into a sort of a phony debate about between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens. I think the reality of what happened in the election, and look, it'll take us all time to unpack that, but I think Roderick has outlined the case. The centre left were the group, were the voter pool that supported the Green Party in the past. In some cases, that came from transfers from Sinn Féin when they didn't have sufficient candidates. And that centre left group didn't reward the Green Party for being in government. And the reality was, over the 5 years, often the criticisms of the Green Party didn't come from Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. The biggest criticisms came often from the environmental movement and other people who I would have said we're looking for the perfect being the enemy of the good. The reality is, and I think,
give us an example of that then.
Well, look, I'll give you one example, like the infamous intervention by Mark Ruffalo encouraging Green Party members to be part of the programme for government at the beginning of the government term. And then at the end of the government term, over an amendment within the planning bill that may allow for a state gas.
Sorry, Mark Ruffalo wasn't an elected member of the Green Party. No, but he's an environmentalist campaigner.
But Colin, you did ask me for an example.
Sure.
And there was,
I know, but one from within, where an elected Green proposed a policy that was so perfectionist
fly. I don't imagine Mark Ruffalo in his busy day just decided
to think of
an amendment.
Well, can you think of one off the top of your head?
I'm citing one, right? So
Green representative.
But my point was is that the environmental movement outside of the Green Party, I often felt over the 5 years that the work of the Green Party to try and address the Green, and it wasn't just the Green Party, there's many TDs within Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that want to take action on climate action too, but often the perfect was the enemy of the good. Right. And as I cite that example in the amendment in the planning legislation as being one of those.
Okay, you've heard Paul McAuliffe there, Roderick O'Gorman. Oh help! Oh no, it's the Ruffalo.
I might come back to Paul's comment just on roads, which was a narrative that went through a lot of our time in government. And like I was at the launch of a big new road project, Snugborough Road interchange, there the last couple of weeks just before the election. That's freed up a lot of congestion in Blanchardstown, made it a lot safer for cyclists and quicker for buses to get in and out of the Blanchardstown centre. There are lots of examples of major road projects, the Dunkettle interchange, the Listowel bypass, that were passed during this term of government. But one thing we were unapologetic about is that we need to do more in public transport, because public transport has been the poor relation of transport investment in Ireland over decades. And Eamon made it very clear that for our term in government, we'd look to prioritise that. And I have a big concern now that major projects that Eamon actually got through the planning system, so Dart West, that'll benefit my own constituency, Dart South West, the Metrolink that's through the Metropolitan Rail in Limerick and Waterford, Lewis in Galway and in Finglas. Cork, and of course in Finglas.
Why do you think they're in jeopardy?
Because there isn't the funding in the NDP right now. We made it very clear we'd use this, if we were re-elected to government, we'd use a substantial portion of the Apple money and money from surpluses to actually see that those programmes, those projects that we've finally gotten ready to go, are actually delivered. But when you listen to the rhetoric, particularly from some of the regional independents who is very kind of strong, it's roads, roads, roads all the time, I worry that we won't see that money put aside in the next programme for government. And yet again, we will lose the opportunity to invest when we actually have the capital to do so.
Okay. Eimear Higgins, Verona Murphy, didn't get elected as Ciarán Corla for nothing. For sure, she got elected on her own merits by a secret ballot in PRS-TV. But in terms of the backing that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael gave her, it wasn't for nothing. It was an investment in the formation of a coalition with the regional independents. So that's the way it's looking, isn't it?
Well, I suppose firstly, if I could just take the opportunity to congratulate Verona. She's the first ever female Cathaoirleach Ciarán Corla of Dáil Éireann. I think that's really significant. You're right. At the moment, obviously, talks between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are at an advanced stage. Regional independents have indicated that they will be willing to have talks at a more deeper stage. And one of the suggestions they had was that we would consider backing their candidate for Ciarán Corla, which we have now done.
And Simon Harris conceding in an interview in the Irish Times today, he accepts Micheál Martin will be the Taoiseach when the new government is formed. So we did hear that, let's do policy first, let's do housekeeping later. It appears the housekeeping has already hoved into view.
I don't think anyone was surprised by that. I mean, unfortunately, from my perspective as a Fine Gael TD, Fianna Fáil got more seats than us. The last election was the only time we've had a rotating Taoiseach, but it was very much set the precedent for the party who has the most votes will I assume go first, and that seems to be with Simon Harris's thinking on it too, in terms of taking over the Taoiseach's office. But it is about policy. Like, unless we have common policy platform, we won't get through the next 5 years. And that's what we want to do. We want to deliver five budgets.
Right,
and
so would you agree with Roderick O'Gorman there that there may be significant policy concessions may have to be made in spending and the like to the regional independents to get stuff across the line then?
Well, we don't know that. We're at a point where we know that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together will be one vote short in terms of the new majority in an enlarged Dáil. We obviously want to have more than just one person to be voting with the government. We want to have stability. We want to be able to have strong leadership, stability, five consecutive budgets. We want to be able to provide that to the people of Ireland. And ultimately, over the next 6 weeks, that's when those decisions are going to be made. I think there's very common policy platforms between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. They're their own separate entities. They campaigned independently in the campaign, but there is a lot of commonality there. I think they worked very well together over the next 5 years. And as the main coalition partners, I would hope they would work together well over the next five.
It's arguably going to be hardest on your party, Paul McAuliffe, because with that 10-seat advantage, you know, there's a certain concession made there by Simon Harris, at least rhetorically, that Micheál Martin will be going first. But in terms of the number of cabinet positions that would be commensurate with the seats you'd won in the overall shake-up of things, there are going to be a lot of disappointed people, aren't there?
Well, look, there were very few disappointed people in Fianna Fáil on Wednesday when we returned with a figure of 48 TDs. And I think it was a substantive victory for Fianna Fáil in terms of the offering that we put to the Irish people, the offer that we would continue both economic growth and stability. And I think as we head into the negotiations, they have to be the pillars by which we put together an agreement. And it's kind of a really boring analysis, but that phase of negotiations of nothing's agreed till everything's agreed really is the kind of the phase we're at. There's three layers. You know, there's the Taoiseach's office, which gives your party, you know, huge influence across departments. There's the ministers that your party controls, which means the things that maybe aren't predicted become areas that you have influence over because they're your colleagues. They're the people who have the same values as you. And the third one is the policy document. So the departments you don't control, you can leverage action out of ministers that aren't in your party.
I suppose
all three of those have to reflect the strength of Fianna Fáil. So I think a lot of people in Fianna Fáil are adamant on that. But we also believe that you can provide that balance across those three layers.
Okay. I mean, there's a strong argument for continuity as well, isn't there? I mean, you went into the election and say you fought for on the basis of, you know, Dara O'Brien's record in housing. Why not leave him there? He knows the ropes at this stage. From, you know, why is there so much keenness, for example, to put the hand up for justice, for example, and not stay in housing, which is what most people would say is the biggest issue that needs to be solved?
But I think the only speculation about who will be in what ministries has been maybe on the media side. There's certainly no discussion of that.
You're not hearing your colleagues talking about it.
We have, but nobody is talking, and nobody that is supporting the government is at the point where they're presumptive enough to accept that they will be a minister. Look, the reality is that the government was re-elected. That is the outcome of the election. So yes, we want to have a continuation of the stability, but we don't want to have a continuation of the issues where we need to address things. So in the areas of justice, where we do want to see more action, in the areas of disability, in the areas of housing, we want to do more. So I'm more interested in the influence we have over the programme for government as a whole, including those departments we don't control, than the names and faces. That will happen after Christmas, and that will be in the remit of Micheál Martin. And I think he's put together a good team last time, and I know he will do that this time.
I'll come to you in a moment just on that issue of disability, Roderick O'Gorman, but Emer Higgins, Fine Gael giving up on justice in this, is that your understanding?
No, it's not my understanding. My understanding is none of this has been talked about at a serious level yet. We're literally talking about the policies. That's what our programme for government negotiation teams are sitting down and doing. I understand that Taoiseach and Taoiseach will meet at a later stage when we have those that common policy platform agreed to tease out where the land will lay in terms of that. But absolutely not. Like, Fine Gael is the party of law and order. We've had Minister for Justice and Helen McEntee, who has increased the number of Gardaí, who's, you know, really made huge strides in justice. And we need to build on that progress. I mean, we know we now have the Dublin City Centre Task Force. Our national planning framework does talk about its stagnation in some of their cities. So we need to make sure that justice plays a key role in revitalising so many of our our cities around the country.
The reconfiguration of Justice Roderick O'Gorman, as I say, I will get to the issue of disability with you as well, but the reconfiguration of justice and integration being subsumed back into the Department of Justice, do you see that as a positive or a negative move?
It's not what I would see as the priority. What I see as the priority is two elements. One is that it doesn't matter if the civil servants doing the work on finding accommodation for international protection applicants are in my department or in the Department of Justice. It's, are we giving them the support to deliver on that? And I believe that's done through an agency, a dedicated agency tasked with the accommodation element. My own view is it should deal with the processing element as well, subsume the international protection offices as well. But if we don't do that, just having civil servants doing the same thing in a different department isn't going to make any difference. The second thing then is the cooperation with other departments, and particularly the Department of Housing. And there's about 6,000 people that my department accommodates now in international protection accommodation who have status, who it is the job of local authorities of the Department of Housing to house. And until that element is addressed, we're not going to see real progress on the accommodation side.
OK, I'll come back to that issue. But just Simon Harris said in that interview to the Irish Times, on disability, there'll be a resourcing and funding issue the next government will have to address. We're up for that. Are you left wondering maybe why the same level of determination with regard to the funding maybe wasn't shown in the last government?
Well, we grew disability funding from 2 billion when we came in, myself and Minister Anne Rabbitt, to 3.2 billion when we left. So we put a focus on growing the overall budget. The big challenge is the lack of appropriate therapists, of speech and language therapists, and occupational therapists.
There's a gap of 700 at the moment.
Yeah, and just, I'm really pleased to see the focus on disability that has arisen throughout this election campaign and going into the programme for government negotiations. That can only be a positive thing. But the next government and people participating in these talks have to be really honest with parents out there who are looking for services. They have to show how they're actually going to deliver those extra therapists. They can either be attracted back, those maybe Irish therapists who are working abroad, or we can train more. But we have to be really honest where we're training more, and it was great. There's 40% more places for occupational therapists and speech and language therapists in Irish universities this year. That's a really good step, but it's going to take a few years before they're ready to practice. I just think parents who have, you know, been let down in the past, we have to be very honest with them in terms of when they will see significant, meaningful changes in terms of the therapies.
There are organisations who are willing to provide help and resources. For example, Sensational Kids, who've built a centre of excellence, or in the middle of building a centre of excellence in Kildare, and the funding on that has dried up. To see it through to completion and fit it out, and you know, there's a solution that's not going to require years of putting people in training, and yet it just appears to be a bit of a case of computer says no as far as that the particular fund that was being used to fund it is.
Well,
I
know Minister Rabbitt specifically on many occasions highlighting Sensational Kids as the model that we need to use to bridge services for children with disabilities while we are looking to get more therapists in place. And look, those sort of services have to be part of it. And Minister Rabbitt used some of that additional funding we put into disability to do that. We agreed in 2020 to move disability out of the Department of Health and into my department. That took 2 years to happen. And that the slow rate of that change was very problematic.
So you wouldn't like to see it move back in?
I think that would be a huge mistake. I think despite the fact that it has only had the political responsibility in my department for 18 months, we have been able to shine a much greater light on disability. That's why we got the optional protocol ratified. It's why we got assisted decision-making legislation passed. And it's why we saw that significant increase in budget, though absolutely recognise it needs to grow more.
I do want to get to the other issue, because the issue of accommodating people in asylum was brought up by yourself there. There was a case before the High Court this week, and your department, you've conceded that the accommodation, which is ultimately designed to take 1,000 men in Lissy Wullan near Athlone, Would be classified as an unauthorised development and yet continue. I think there was some dispute over whether or not the right environmental assessment was being done. But proceeding with an unauthorised development, I mean, that particularly coming from the Green Party background that you're in, how does that sit with you?
So fundamentally, we've recognised that we have a crisis in terms of the provision of accommodation for international protection applicants. And we saw the very real consequences of that earlier this year when we had hundreds of people sleeping rough on the streets of Dublin. My department, as part of the Olive Government response, put out a new comprehensive accommodation strategy. We've also seen the High Court, in cases that IREC have taken against my department, set out that people's the fundamental rights of asylum seekers were being breached when we couldn't accommodate them. So my department has looked to bring forward an emergency response. And we're caught in this situation where part of the system...
Is it not possible to do, an emergency response within the law?
The planning system doesn't allow for the speed that is necessary when you have hundreds of people on sleeping rough and you're looking to provide accommodation.
It's still the system though, isn't it?
It is the system, and we have looked to work within the system, and in the particular case that you've cited, the court has said certain elements of the actions we took weren't within the system. But we are being told by the High Court, and the state is being told by the High Court, on one side you have an emergency, you're breaching people's rights, and then on the other side, but the steps you're taking aren't acceptable that will be a challenge for the next government to see how we can quickly respond to the needs of people who are unaccommodated while at the same time meet
right.
all
are there other unauthorised developments?
We look to work within existing planning rules using ministerial orders at all times, because what we have identified, the use of state-owned land, whether it's in Athlone, whether it's in other sites, is the best way. And that is seen in the context that we don't have hundreds of people sleeping rough anymore because of the steps taken over the last number of months. We've been able to intervene. We've been able to provide male international accommodations, protection seekers, with a basic standard of accommodation.
And are you talking, do you think a change in the law is required then?
I do. I think there's a change in the law required. But I also think there is a change in the resourcing and the backup to do this sort of work. And I would bring you back to the accommodation agency that I spoke about earlier on. A dedicated state body focused on this, I think, will give far better results. And we have to recognise we are going to see these higher levels of international protection applications going forward. And we have to have the infrastructure as a state. We need the infrastructure in place to deal with it.
We're going to come back to a related issue on this. We're going to have to take a break first.
Saturday with Conamo Mungon on RTE Radio 1.